We have the operators at the end.
Yeah, it's everybody, yeah. Yeah, so.
Good morning, ICANN61. How it works, root server operation. March 12th.
Time?
Thanks.
They want both of them?
Yeah, I think so.
So who's going to have the other mic?
Hi.
Who's going to have the other mic?
Oh, I guess, well, the presenter will have the mic, right?
The mic?
Yeah, because yeah, when they want to walk around.
But test, test.
I'm sitting here, right? It's okay.
This is a test. Test 1, 2, 3. Sounds pretty good.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to How It Works. We are running a little bit late after that wonderful opening ceremony. So please be patient. We will be starting shortly. Thank you.
Hey, folks, we're going to get started in about 2 or 3 minutes. We are starting 15 minutes late because of the opening ceremony ran a bit over. But if you could be ready to start in a couple, two or three minutes, that'd be great.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome to How It Works. This session, we'll be talking about root server operations. Thank you again for your patience. Andrew McConaughey is our first presenter. Andrew.
Thank you. Oh, good. My mic's turned on. Hi, my name is Andrew McConaughey. I work for ICANN Policy Support, supporting the RSAC. And I'm going to be talking about the root server system. So first off, a bit of an outline. We've got 4 sections today. Overview of the domain name system, the root server system today and its features. And then I'm going to hand it over to my colleague, Steve Sheng. And he's going to talk about he's going to give an explanation of Anycast, and then talk about the RSAC and some recent RSAC activities. After that, we'll have a question and answer period with some of the root server operators that are in the room. Come up here on stage to take your questions. So please save your questions till the end. So let's start off with an overview of the domain name system and the root servers. Okay, so a bit of a recap. What are IP addresses and how do they function as identifiers on the internet? So IP addresses are the fundamental identifier on the internet. And all hosts connected to the internet do need to have IP addresses, whether that's IPv4 or IPv6, or you're operating through a NAT, you still need an IP address. And IP addresses are a numerical label. They're not really all that human friendly. They're just numbers. There we go. Clicker is a little bit fussy this morning. So why do we need DNS? Well, the original problem was that I mentioned on the previous slide, IP addresses are hard to remember, and they change a bunch. So the original problem with DNS was just having some human memorable names that we could map to IP addresses so we didn't have to remember IP addresses. Those problems remain, but there's some more modern problems as well, such as IP addresses may be shared, and multiple IP addresses can map to a single service. So we kind of have this modern problem of both the many-to-one and the one-to-many being added upon the original problem of just IP addresses being really hard to remember. Now, the domain name system is hierarchical. And as you can see in that diagram, at the top we have a root. And beneath that, we have what are called top-level domains, or TLDs. Some examples include .edu, .mil, .uk. And then beneath that, we have what some people refer to as the second level, and then the third level, and on and on. These are named IP address mappings. That's what we're most familiar with. But there are other mappings as well, such as MX records for mail servers, reverse records, sometimes called PTR records, which map from IP addresses back to names. Okay, so this slide's pretty complicated, and I'll spend some time walking through it. This slide is meant to show the DNS resolution process, so how a user experiences the DNS, what a user goes through, the various steps, kind of the flow of what it means to interact with the DNS so that a user can resolve a domain name to an IP address and eventually get to a website. So we have our user over here on the right, and they really, really want to go to www.example.com as a web server. So the first thing they do is they open up their web browser, and that triggers a DNS request. And that DNS request is going to go to what's called a recursive name server. And assuming the recursive name server doesn't have anything in its cache, and you know, let's pretend for the sake of argument, for the sake of this demonstration, that someone just turned this recursive name server on, its cache is empty, it doesn't know anything. So what does it do? Well, it just got a query for www.example.com, and it has a bunch of work to do before it can go back to the user with an answer. So the first thing it does is it goes to the root, and it says, hey, here's www.example.com. Where is it? And the root says, I don't know where that whole thing is, but I do know where .com is. And so it returns to the recursive name server with the address of the .com name servers. So then the recursive name server goes out to the .com name servers, and he goes, hey, where's www.example.com? And the .com name servers say, well, I don't know where that whole thing is, but I do know where the example.com name server is. Here it is. So then the recursive name server goes to the example.com name servers and says, hey, where is www.example.com? And finally, he gets the response he's looking for, and the recursive name server is able to respond to the user with the address of www.example.com. And so that's how a user will, you know, go through the entire process of resolving this domain name to an IP address and finally be able to visit the web page. There's another thing I haven't talked about in this slide, which is the security aspect, the DNSSEC, or sometimes called DNS security aspect, which is that with each one of these questions, between the recursive name server and each one of these authoritative name servers, either the root name server, the .com name server, and the example.com name server, these answers that go back to the recursive name server from these authoritative servers are signed, and the recursive name server is able to validate that they're the correct answer, that this answer hasn't been tampered with, that it hasn't been given by the, you know, the wrong authoritative name server. This is the correct answer, and it's able to do this through DNSSEC. So that's the domain name system resolution process. My clicker just takes a couple tries. So like we saw in the previous slide, the root servers only know who needs to be asked next, right? They only have the addresses of the TLD name servers like the com and the net and the org. However, they typically don't ask that often. In the previous example I gave, you know, we had this kind of hypothetical situation where the recursive name server had just been turned on and it didn't have anything in its cache. Well, this is pretty rare. Recursive name servers have pretty extensive caching, and the vast majority of queries that go to recursive name servers are answered out of the cache. So that means that there's a lot fewer queries to the root than what you might originally think. Okay, Some modern refinements to DNS. So I already talked about DNSSEC, also sometimes called DNS security or security extensions. The point of DNSSEC is to sign responses that go to the recursive name servers so that the recursive name server can validate them. And by validation, I mean he can ensure that it's the correct response because it's been signed by a key through cryptography. So he's able to ensure that the response is correct. There's also been some privacy enhancements, and these are still being heavily worked on at the Internet Engineering Task Force. Something like DNS over transport layer security, which will kind of secure the transmission of the query over the wire and ensure that, you know, the prying eyes can't view it. Those are still very much in active development. Another modern refinement to DNS is Anycast. And DNS is, Anycast is used heavily by the root server operators. And Anycast basically does two important things. It allows multiple servers to share a single IP address, and it protects against DDoS attacks. And my colleague Steve Shang will be talking later in more depth on Anycast and how it does that. Okay. The root zone versus the root servers. So the root zone is the data that the root servers serve. So you can think of this like the root zone is the starting point. It's a list of TLDs and name servers. It's the top of the hierarchy or tree. It's managed by ICON, per community policy. It's compiled and distributed by the root zone maintainer to all root server operators. And again, it's the database content of the root servers. It is the data that the root servers serve. On the other hand, the root servers, they respond with data from the root zone. Currently, there are 13 identities and over 900 instances at many different physical locations worldwide. And the root servers are purely a technical role. They serve the root zone data. And each of these Anycast clouds that the root server operators run are their own responsibility. So delving a bit more into what a root server operator is, there are 12 different professional engineering groups that are focused on the reliability and stability of the service, accessibility for all internet users. They're professional and they cooperate with one another while also acting independently. And they're a diverse group of organizations. They're, by that I mean they're technically, organizationally, and geographically diverse. However, operators are not involved in policymaking, and they're not involved in data modifications. They just serve the root zone data. They are involved in careful operation of the service, of serving that data, and evaluating deploying new technical modifications, so new standards that might come out of the Internet Engineering Task Force, and making sure that the service remains stable, robust, and reachable by all users across the internet. So that was a bit of a background on the DNS. A little bit technical, but probably not too technical. Now we're going to go into the root server system today and some of its features. And I will click eventually. There we go. So the growth of the root server system. This slide shows a bit of the history of the numbers of root servers, root server identities. There have been over the years, since the 1980s, and you can see that it's progressed. And now, since 1998, we have 13 different identities. And these changes have mainly been responding to technical demands as well as scaling issues. Nowadays, scaling issues are really solved by Anycast. Anycast is just a wonderful tool in the tool chest of root server operators to deal with scaling issues. Root servers today, they're all operating IPv6 and IPv4. So there are 13 IPv4 and IPv6 address pairs. And again, there are over 900 individual instances. These are some of the foundational principles of the root server system. There are five of them. It's important that the root server system provide a stable, reliable, and resilient platform for the DNS, that it operates for the common good of all the internet, that the IANA is the DNS, is the source of the DNS root data. That's the root zone data. And that architectural changes be made based on the results of technical evaluation and demonstrated technical need. And that technical operation and expectations of the DNS are defined by the Internet Engineering Task Force. And if you're interested in a bit more of the history of the root server system, you can download and read RSAC 023, the history of the root server system, from the RSAC website. Okay, these are the root server operators today. We see that there are 13 identities, and the host names of them are listed on the left. You see in the middle column the IP addresses. There's both IPv4 and IPv6 for all of them. And each one of these IPv4 and IPv6 addresses, well, at least all the IPv4 addresses result in an Anycast cloud. So behind those IP addresses, there are many, many servers, over 900 at this point, but it's growing all the time. The last ICANN, when I gave this presentation, I was saying there were over 800 instances, and now I'm saying there are over 900 instances. So it's constantly growing. Here's a bit of a view of the root servers today. This is from the website rootservers.org, root-servers.org. And it's just kind of an overview of where the root servers are. It's not particularly precise. It doesn't tell you that there are exactly, for instance, you know, 7 root server instances in Madagascar. It's a graphic. It's kind of interesting. You can drill down further if you go to the website. And you can even look at the actual cities that each instance is in under each one of the operators. So you can, this is a very kind of broad and general overview, but you can, if you go to the website, you can really drill down and get some interesting information out of that. This is the root zone management structure. So this is how the root zone data, the root zone, gets to the root servers. Let's say that, you know, you're a TLD operator, you need to make a change to the root zone, maybe your NS records change, maybe your glue changes. You know, you need to change some of the information associated with some of the records for your TLD. So you'll go to IANA and make that change, and then that change will be passed on to the root zone maintainer, who's currently VeriSign. And then I think 2 times a day they'll distribute that change. They'll distribute the entire root zone to the root server operators. And then the root server operators are responsible for getting that out to their whole Anycast cloud and then serving or responding to the queries that come in from all the recursive resolvers. Some of the features of root server operators. There's a diversity of organizational structure. Their operational history is sometimes different. They use different hardware and software, so they'll use different hardware platforms as well as different software platforms. That helps in terms of security, because there's strong correlation between better security and increased diversity. And they've also got different kinds of funding models. They're different kinds of organizations, and they get their funding in different ways. They do, however, have some shared best practices, strong physical security. They over-provision their capacity to deal with DDoS attacks and as well to deal with spikes in traffic. And they all have a professional and trusted staff. They cooperate through various industry meetings in the community. ICANN is one of them, but also the Internet Engineering Task Force, NOGs such as NANOG or RIPE, DNSOARC, which is an operational and research group. They also use internet-based collaboration tools, and they're transparent in their operations. They also coordinate to prepare for emergencies and in order to protect the infrastructure in case of catastrophic emergencies or other types of emergencies. They have periodic activities to support emergency response. And I can't read that last bullet because it's cut off. Okay. Responses to an evolving internet. So as the internet evolves, so new requirements are placed on the DNS system. And over time, you know, the root server operators have adopted IPv6 and Anycast and DNSSEC. IDNs are also mentioned here because there's a lot of IDNs in the root zone. And the important thing is to increase the robustness, the responsiveness, and the resilience. And again, there are over 900 Anycast instances deployed today. All right. So some of the myths that people might have, some of the misconceptions that folks might have about the root server system. Myth one, root servers control where internet traffic goes. That's not entirely true. In fact, it's not really true at all because it's a myth. Routers actually control where the internet traffic goes. And I think maybe this myth might have come about because, you know, DNS maps names to IP addresses, but ultimately it's routers based on IP addresses that control where the packets go. Another myth is that most DNS queries are handled by a root server. As we saw in the example, that's true if the cache, or that might be true if the cache of recursive DNS servers is empty, but that's very rarely true. So most DNS queries are not handled by a root server. Most of them are handled out of the cache of the recursive. Administration of the root zone and service provisioning are the same thing is another myth. That's not true. The diagram I think I showed previously about kind of the division of responsibilities and how a change kind of makes its way through to the root servers, there's different parties involved there. Another myth is that the root server identities have special meaning. They really don't. Or that there are only 13 root servers. There are over 900. Another myth would be that the root server operators conduct operations independently. And while they are independent organizations, there's a lot of coordination and cooperation that goes on to ensure the stable service of the root server system as a whole. And the final myth that the root server operators only receive the TLD portion of a query. Well, that's not actually true. They receive the entire query. This is kind of just the way DNS works. There is some work in the Internet Engineering Task Force to change this. If you're interested, the key word there is queue name minimization, and you can go read about this work, where the root servers might only receive the top portion of the query. Okay, so now I'm going to hand it over to my colleague, Steve Shang, who will take you to the last two sections, starting with Anycast.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. My name is Steve Shang. I'm also a policy staff supporting the RSEC. I'll give an explanation of Anycast and also RSEC and its activities. So Anycast is a routing and addressing term. So let me go back. So there are two terms here, unicast and anycast. There are important differences. In unicast, packets or datagrams from sources all go to the same destination, and a single instance serves all the sources. So in the event of a denial of service attack, all the attack traffic goes to that single instance. So that's unicast. Whereas in anycast, the multiple instances serve the same data to all sources. So these multiple instances have the same IP address. And the intermediate routing policies determine the destination based on the source. So this means the source gets the data faster, gets to the closer destination, and the DDoS attack traffic is sent to the closest instance. So let me illustrate that with a diagram. So here, the illustration of unicast, you see a source and a destination that is identified. The destination is single instance, and the traffic takes the shortest route to the single destination. Here in anycast, you see the three destinations in blue. These destinations all advertise the same IP address. And the routing policy determines the closest you know, where that source to destination. So this means the path from the source to destination is shortened and data is delivered more quickly. So how does this help the denial of service attacks? So in a denial of service attack, an attacker attacked the destination, but because it's anycasted, the traffic only goes to the closest link. So therefore, maybe one of the destination link is overwhelmed, but the other destination still serves traffic. So one of the questions we get from these tutorial sessions is, you know, the root server system and your networks. Some of you are network operators. Some may operate recursive instances. So if you're a network operator, you know, you want to have three or four nearby instances. This, you know, gets the instances closer to you, and in some instances, it will reduce the round trip time. But I think in addition to that, you also want to increase your peering connections and peering arrangements. Sometimes you see you may have a root instance near you, but the traffic still travel around the world to get, you know, to you. And that's because of the peering connections and peering arrangements. So that's also in an important factor. If you're a recursive resolver operator, to increase caching, you might consider deploying RFC 7706 technology. This is running a copy of the root zone on the loopback address. The benefit of that is sometimes, you know, it reduces the privacy risk from the recursive resolver to the root server from the prying eye. It's always, you know, important to turn on DNSSEC validation in resolvers. That ensures that you're getting the unmodified IANA data, you know, all the way, you know, as Andrew mentioned, you know, through the correct data. And finally, I think this is because we're at ICANN, we invite technical experts and others to participate and contribute to the RSAC caucus. That's where the technical advice of RSAC is generated and created. With that, let me give a quick update, an overview of RSAC and recent RSAC activities. So RSAC stands for... Okay. The Root Server System Advisory Committee. It's chartered to advise the ICANN community and board on matters relating to the operation, administration, security, and integrity of the Internet's root server system. So please note, this is a very narrow scope for this advisory committee. One important distinction that is often conflated, especially, you know, within ICANN, is RSAC is a committee that produces advice primarily to the board, but also to other ICANN bodies and organizations that involve themselves in the overall DNS business. However, the root server operators are represented inside RSAC. But it's very important to note, RSAC does not involve itself in operational matters. So I think this is a very important distinction, not to conflate those two entities. So within the overall ICANN governance structure is one of the three advisory committees. No, actually, four advisory committees. And it sits in the ICANN ecosystem there. So within the organization, the RSAC is composed of the appointed representative of the root server operators, and each one can appoint an alternate to the RSAC. It also have liaisons to the root zone management partners and key technical organizations. The RSAC caucus, where I mentioned earlier, is the body of volunteer subject matter experts. Their members are confirmed by the RSAC based on a statement of interest. The current RSAC chairs are Brett from VeriSign and Tripti from University of Maryland. Brett and Tripti, are you in the room? You can raise your hand. That's Brett. I know Tripti, but she may just step out momentarily. So within the RSAC, it has several liaisons. One is the liaison from the IANA function operator, the rule zone maintainer. Andrew showed that diagram, the rule zone management flow. So IANA and rule zone maintainer, the other two critical entities here. RSAC also have liaisons from the Internet Architecture Board. That provides, architectural guidance, to the ISOC and IETF on internet architectural matters. Within ICANN, RSAC have liaisons to the Security and Stability Advisor Committee, the ICANN Board, Nominating Committee, the Customer Standing Committee, which is the committee set up to look and provide to look at the performance of the IANA function that's currently performed by PTI. And finally, a Rule Zone Evolution Review Committee. This is a committee set up, as part of the IANA transition to look at architectural issues for the evolution of the Rule Zone. The RSAC caucus currently have 88 technical experts. Their statement of interest is public, in any RSAC publication, for any of the caucus members that contribute or lead that work, they are acknowledged at the end of each report. So there's public credit for the individual work. They bring diverse expertise to the publications, and the caucus have transparency of who does the work. The mailing list is open, so you can view the archives. And there's also a framework for getting things done. If you're interested to join the RSAC caucus, the correct email to apply is rsac-membership@icann.org. Here are some of the recent RSAC publications. RSAC have a publication series, that's the numbering. Currently, they are on 31. So the last three publication is RSAC 29, which describes a outcome of their 2017 workshop in October. RSAC 30 is a statement on entries in DNS root sources. And 31 is a response to GNSO PDP on, subsequent procedures. So this is about, subsequent procedure for creating new TLDs. And the RSAC response touches on a topic of scaling the root. The RSAC will have a public session this week. Please attend to hear more in-depth details of these publications. The current work, there are two: harmonization of anonymization procedures for data collecting. So the RSAC published RSAC 002, and the root server operators implement that to publish statistics about the root servers and the root server system. And there's effort going away to look at anonymization procedure for some of those data. And there's the other work party is the packet size and DNS. Since the restructure of RSAC in 2013, transparency is one important goal RSAC trying to improve. And they have made lots of progress on that, by establishing the caucus, by publishing the minutes and workshop reports so that, the ICANN community can understand, you know, what the current status of the work and the reports, the workshops. There is a public RSAC and caucus calendar with all the various work party meetings. And at each ICANN meeting, the RSAC held public sessions. We have the tutorials. And the liaison relationship makes sure the information flows, to the key organizations. And finally, the RSAC have codified the operational procedures that defines how RSAC operates. That's also on the website. And I think we're in the third revision, right? The root server operators also take steps to improve transparency. The root ops agendas are published for the IETF meetings. Every operator published RSAC 002 statistics. They are participating in RSAC. There's a public web page, a single web page from that web page, you can go to individual operator web page. They collaborate on reports on major events. For example, the DDoS attack events last year. And the RSAC, you act as a gateway to channel these questions to root operators, and they will answer those questions. So for more information, here's a link to the RSAC webpage. Any general questions, you can send to this email address. And the link to the caucus and membership is listed here. And finally, I want to bring to your attention that the RSAC has recently published on its website a frequently asked questions and answers. I think it's a list of 25 questions frequently asked. Some of those are generated from these sessions. So those are very helpful in understanding the RSAC. So with that, I think we come to the end of the presentation. We have some RSAC members here. I would like to invite them to come up here to the stage to introduce themselves. And also, I'll moderate a question and answer session. So with that, may I invite the RSAC members to come to the stage? If you have any questions, please raise your hand, and I will identify you. So let's do that.
You go first, yeah.
Okay, may I ask first the RSAC members to introduce yourselves, starting from Fred?
Fred Baker, ISC.
John Crane with ICANN.
Kaveh Rangeberg, RIPE NCC.
Brad Verd with Verisign.
Lars-Johan Liman, NetNode.
Thank you. We'll begin with the question, online question. Kathy?
We have an online question from Jose De La Cruz. The question is, are there plans to expand the entities to more than 13?
Are there plans to expand entities to more than 13? Who would like to take that question?
So I can start.
Kaveh.
Yeah, Kaveh Rangeberg from RIPE NCC, just for the record. First of all, technically, it should be possible to expand. That's my personal take. But I think that the real question is, why should we expand the number of identifiers? Because those letters, basically, are identifiers. But from a technology standpoint, if you look at the current situation, adding nodes or adding letters will not have a significant or a visible technical difference. So the first question is, what problem are you trying to solve with adding new identifiers? That was my take.
I think I'll add the Brad Bird with VeriSign. I think I will add that this is a reoccurring question. We get this quite often. And I think the answer is RSEC is looking at not only adding but maybe removing some. Maybe 13 isn't the right number. Maybe it's less. Maybe it's more. We don't have that that answer. And it is one of the things that is on our work list to address. But as Kaveh said, that our goal would be to would be looking to solve a technical issue with that, with the answer. Thanks.
Thank you, Kaveh and Brett. With that, I open to questions on the floor. The gentleman in the front.
If you could please, or just a reminder, please state your name and affiliation if you have any. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My name is Abdul Karim. I'm from Nigeria. I'm a first-time ICANN fellow. My question is about the root servers, because each of the 13 root servers are probably duplicated somewhere around the world with the same IP address. So if there is a problem with one of the duplications, how can you differentiate, since they have the same IP address? So how is that going to be located? Thank you.
Fred Baker, ISC. So this is a question really about how Anycast works, which there was some discussion in the previous presentations. The fundamental thing is routing. The fundamental thing there is routing. So you have each of these servers not only performing the service of responding to requests and, you know, here's the translation, whatever it is, but also engaged with BGP, with the ISPs or the IXPs that they're associated with, and announcing their address. And so when a request goes from somewhere to the address, routing will direct it to the instance of the server that's topologically closest. Now, should one of the servers go down, should routing be lost, should bad things happen in some way, then that address from that place is withdrawn from BGP. BGP is no longer routing toward that, and there are going to be other instances around that that are offering the same address. So routing will now take the packet to some other place, and that's just standardly the way routing works. In the worst case, let's imagine, and I don't know why this would happen, but imagine that the address was no longer available in routing. It just didn't exist. One of the reasons that we have 13 RSOs is so that the application requesting that, the resolver in somebody's computer, can pick one of the other addresses and go ask somebody else. So there's kind of two levels of backup there.
Thank you. Lehman?
Lars Lehman from NetNode. I'd like to fill in that when you use Anycast, every server has two IP addresses. One of the IP addresses is the same for all computers, and that's the one that's used for the DNS traffic. In addition, every server has a unique, separate address, and that's used by the operators to reach it from behind, so to speak, to do service and administration.
Thank you. John?
Yeah, and I think you were also questioning how you can tell which one you're talking to. There's actually a DNS query for a text query at the type chaos hostname.bind, and there's a couple of other variants where every instance actually has a name that you can query in the DNS, which will tell you which one it is, and I can show you that on a computer later if you want to know that.
Thank you for that question and the comprehensive answer. Gentleman in the back.
R.C. Sharma from India. For the security of DNS, we want to implement DNSSEC. Can you just tell us in which country that DNS has been completely implemented and any problems that has occurred during the implementation?
Question on DNSSEC deployment. Anyone? I think there's a DNSSEC workshop on Wednesday, and at the beginning of that workshop, they also show the deployment numbers you know, across the globe. So that will be one session where you can find those numbers.
Yeah, that's this Bradford VeriSign. That's a little bit out of scope for RSEC. If there's a different way to rephrase your question and have it attributable to the root, maybe we can try to address it.
Kaveh Rangberg from RIPNCC. So basically, just to clarify, what we publish as root server operators, we get a signed zone file. That's the root zone, which is signed. So it has passed RSEC or root server operators job basically starts after that, when there is already a signed root zone file. And we basically distribute that file. So from our point of view, we just distribute a signed root zone, and we make sure what we get, the integrity of the file we get, is preserved, and we make sure that we keep it when we distribute the file or the content.
Thank you for that. Any other questions? Gentlemen over there.
Hello from Kiribati. I have one question. When we have when we deploy the DNSSEC, would there be a problem with the subdomains, or say under the .com, that have no keys or not yet changed to the DNSSEC? Would that be a problem?
Again, I see this is also a DNSSEC question that may be better fitted for tomorrow for Wednesday's workshop. That's my take. Yeah, so I'll invite you to that workshop. Please, you know, come to me, and I'll let you know the details of that workshop. Now I move over to I move to an online question, and then you're next.
I have another question from Jose de la Cruz. Question is, who can participate in RSAC?
Thank you.
The RSAC has a caucus, which currently is over 80 members of subject matter experts, and most of our, all of our work parties come from the caucus, are sponsored by the caucus, and there is a, I think it's up here on the screen. Their caucus membership is, if you're interested, you can send to the email address. We have a membership committee that reviews the application. You have to give an SOI, basically a statement of interest, and then you're part of the caucus, and you are part of the solution.
Thank you, Brett, and thank you, Jose, for that question. Steve, gentleman in the front.
Steve, just to add to that, just to reiterate, so actually, most of the actual technical work of RSAC is done via the caucus. So if you're a member of caucus, basically you are doing the actual work. So RSAC, that as you saw in the slides, the 12 organizations, the 13 operators, basically do the most of the administration work. When we receive a question or when advice is needed, we form a work party in the caucus, and all of us, the RSAC committee members, are also part of the RSAC caucus. So if we want to also be part of the solution, we will also join the work party. But for each question or advice that we receive, we form a work party, and it's basically that the work is done within the caucus. So you will be part of the RSAC.
And I will add that the work is also attributable to the people in the caucus who do the work. So it isn't that the caucus does the work, writes the papers, and other people get credit for it. If you are a contributor, you get full attribution.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. My name is Abdulkarim once again. I want to find out, how often does RSAC meet, and how often does the caucus meet?
Again, Bradford VeriSign. The RSAC meets monthly. We have monthly calls where there are minutes taken, and we cover issues. Those calls are public and can be no. The minutes are public. The minutes are public. We also meet, RSAC meets here at the ICANN meetings. And then RSAC also, we've been running for the last couple of years, we have a number, we've been doing two workshops a year as we've been working through some evolution work that you can hear about if you come to our RSAC public meeting here. As far as the caucus goes, the caucus works online. Work parties happen all the time. Work within the work parties is ongoing. Depending on the work party itself, there might be weekly calls or bi-weekly. It just depends on the workload that's actually happening. The caucus meetings themselves are here at the AGM. And this is, by the way, determined by the caucus. So this was the caucus asked for when they meet. And they came to the conclusion that we meet at the AGM meeting of ICANN, and we meet at every other ICANN or every other IETF meeting, which I think an easier way to say that, it's the even-numbered IETFs is when the caucus meets at those meetings.
Thank you. And the next meeting for caucus is at IETF 102 in Montreal. Thank you. Any other questions? Gentleman on the left.
Okay, thank you. My name is Boni Mtengwa from the telecoms regulator in Zimbabwe. I've got a question. We are keen to have one of the root servers in Zimbabwe, but does ICANN assist if a member state wants to have a root server, or maybe it's dependent on the country negotiating with the root server operators alone, or maybe there's assistance that is needed? That is given by ICANN, or maybe there's some requirements that must be met first.
Thank you for that question on hosting a root server instance. Lehman?
Lars Lehman from NetNode. It's several, if not all, but at least most root server operators have Anycast clouds and are willing to engage in discussions regarding where to place them and where to host them. It's not the discussion between a country and a root server operator. It's between a specific hosting organization. In many times, it's an exchange point for internet traffic, or it's a large internet service provider or something. And you are right that there are certain requirements that need to be met, mostly technical and financial requirements. We are working on compiling a list of contact points, but I would say come up and talk to any root server operator, and we will try to explain how we see the relationship and what the requirements are from us, and others will do the same from their side. So there are definitely openings for having a root name server in your environment if we can find a way to meet the requirements, because it has to work. So there are requirements, yes.
Thank you, Lehman. Any other questions? Gentleman in the front again.
Sorry, my name is Abdulkarim once again. I've just been thinking that, yes, DNS, the root server, is an important part of the internet. And the working of RSAC and the root server's operators seems to be very open. And we talk about bad guys trying to attack the root servers. How do you filter that out? That, oh, this person has like an ulterior motive. Since anybody can join, anybody can be part of the meeting, anybody can contribute. So how do you filter that out? Thank you.
Question on how to filter out bad guys, forms and work with RSAC.
So, I mean, it's a good question, a complex question as well, because there are multiple facets to that. But one of the things I think, and I'm speaking only for RIPE and CZ, but I think we all share that, most of root operators, if not all, share that sentiment that we cannot guarantee security of roots via obscurity. So we are very open on not only on how we work, but DNS by design is open. So you can get a lot of information about instances where they're hosted and all of that. And in many cases, we publish them, but even if we don't, via DNS with some basic knowledge, it's easy to figure that out. So the system is open. Via the amount of capacity that we have from technological standpoint, we basically try to guarantee to be able to answer every single query. And yes, as a root operator, we also receive a lot of let's call them illegitimate queries for no reason or for a reason of attack. But in total, we have enough capacity to be able to stand out and still serve the right queries and good queries.
John?
Yeah, and you know, these are professionally run networks, so all of the operators have skilled engineers and security people, and we take the integrity of our systems very seriously. That's why when you host an instance, for example, there are requirements, and some of those are about who can access the machines and how, etc. So security is something we take very seriously, but as Kaveh just said, the DNS by design and to meet its purpose is very open. So you know, I think that's just the nature of the protocol, if you like.
Thank you. Brad?
I think I'll add, I think more specifically to your question, I think you were, with RSAC, the caucus being open and people being able to join, what is there to prevent a bad guy from joining, trying to do something malicious? Is that what kind of where you were going with the question? I think the, yes, that is a risk. You know, we want to be open, we want to be transparent, and we want people's multiple different points of view so that we come up with the best possible solution for any technical problem that's put in front of us. I would, as the chair or as a co-chair, I hope that there are enough checks and balances with the people in there with good intent that we would be able to identify people with malicious intent and, you know, try to work with them to figure out what's going on. But that, as of yet, I'm not aware of anything quite like that happening, but it is a risk.
Thank you. Next question, gentleman in the back.
Hello, my name is Rahul Gosai and I'm from India. I go back to a point which you made earlier in your presentation that the traffic route is not determined by the root server but by the routers. So I would like to ask you, especially with regard to the fact which you pointed out, the RSAC 002 requirements which are sort of made upon the root server operators to publish their root server statistics. So now if I want to determine what is the total traffic, internet traffic, originating out of a particular location or out of a particular country, then how can I extrapolate that or how can I go about measuring that from some of the statistics which are available readily online, which are available open source? Thank you.
Thanks. Question.
Again, Bradford VeriSign. I think the short answer is you can't. And root DNS traffic should not be used as a measurement of total internet traffic.
Again, no. What I, sorry to interrupt you, but what I want to also ask you is how can I do a back of the envelope kind of estimation or some kind of approximation of, you know, fair estimate? How can I use the DNS traffic as a measure of arriving at a fair estimate?
So in general, and then what Brad is saying, basically to be able even to have a useful estimate, you cannot use DNS for that. DNS is not a platform for that. But there are other measurement techniques. For example, if you want look up Google MLAP, they based on torrent traffic that they see, they try to estimate the rest of traffic for a country or region or all. So there are other projects, but DNS is really not the right platform for that. And the main reason for that, I mean, first of all, the content doesn't go through DNS. But the second part is what you get at DNS at any level, especially at root, a lot of that is cached by resolvers. And efficiency of that cache is not visible to us. So it's basically impossible even to have useful estimates even for the DNS traffic based on that.
Well, and let me add one thing to that. When you go to a root system and the RSAC 02 statistics say I got so many IPv6 requests, so many UDP, so many whatever, they're asking about requests to the root. So that's people trying to find the .coms and the .nets and whatever of the world. They're not particularly looking at particular locations in any sense or even individual companies. They're looking at registries. So it's just the wrong data.
Thanks. Any other questions? Do we have any questions online?
No questions online.
Okay, sorry. My name is Abdulkarim once again. In terms of RSAC and organizing capacity building, do you guys do anything like that, capacity building for probably developing countries or people that are interested? Because a lot of times, if, for example, if I'm interested, I might never work on a root server in my life, but I might be interested in how what you guys do. And sometimes it might be so too technical for me because I don't do it in my daily life, but I want to know more. Thank you.
From I will give my, because I don't know if I understood the question properly, but first of all, let me thank you as a first-time attendee and a fellow, so thank you very much for being so much interactive. It's very much encouraged. About the capacity building, actually, each individual root operator has or might have their own plan. For example, I'm talking for RIPNCC, we are an RIR, Regional Internet Registry, for Europe, Middle East, and Central Asia. But what we do, not only within our region, but also for the rest of the world, including Africa and AP region, we are working with other RIRs. For example, in case of root, we have an MOU with AFRINIC for Africa, or APNIC for Asia-Pacific. And specifically, let me use the example from Africa. What we do in Africa is we have formed, AFRINIC has formed an alliance with ISOC Africa, and they are actually bringing funding and talk to operators and talk to interested parties. And we actually have hosted a few nodes through that fund and that capacity, which was built via ISOC Africa and RIR. So this is the methodology that we at RIPNCC have selected. Others have different methods and different ways of reaching out to regions. So you have to check each individual root operator. And just to mention, because there was also a question about how to get root instances, on the website root-servers.org, you basically have list of each operator, and there you also have the website, their website for the root service. So you can check RIPNCC's website for the root service, VeriSign's website for the root service, and there you can find all the information. So, for example, our agreements with other RIRs is listed there, and how you can get there either directly or indirectly through your regional internet registry is listed there and mentioned there.
If I may add, a lot of these questions are operational in nature, and you happen to have a number of root operators up here also. But I'd refer you to the mandate of RSAC, which is we provide advice about the root server system to the board and the community, where a lot of these questions are not really directed towards RSAC. And I think the group appears happy to answer them, and we want to be as transparent as possible. But we want to continue to, that there is a delineation between root operators and RSAC. So just I want to draw that out. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Any other questions? Going once. Oh, Lehman.
Just a final remark. If you come up with questions after the session, please come and talk to at least me. I guess it goes for the rest of us. We are here for a reason. We want to talk to you, and I'm happy to give the answers I'm able to give anywhere.
And again, I would make a plug for the FAQ that was recently added to the RSAC webpage. Even though, as I stated earlier, a lot of the questions we get are operational in nature, we've gone out of our way to kind of capture all those questions that have happened through multiples of these different presentations, as well as just questions that we normally get. And that is a constantly evolving FAQ. So, if there's something that isn't there, that you have a question, I'm sure somebody else does too, so please share it with us, and we'll add it to our FAQ and make that richer. Thank you.
And with that, let me show you on the screen, on the RSAC website, you have meetings, caucus, publication, and FAQ. When you click on the link, there's a lot more information about meeting minutes, caucus membership, all the RSAC publications, and the frequently asked questions. the root server, root-servers.org website that Kaveh mentioned contains is a gateway to individual root servers. If you have specific optional questions, there's contact information there. And this is also where, in the presentation, we took the Anycast map, and you can, you know, drill down to, you know, there's more information in that website as well. With that, if there are no further questions, I thank you for your participation and for the RSEC members answering the question. Thank you. This session is adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.